Wade Exton. She's recently joined the board, and there is a vacancy where I understand a candidate would certainly satisfy the challenge that you've given to the board. So I think you may have a different picture quite soon.
I can assure the member that, from what I know, the trend is improving.
Any follow-up questions? Can I consider Part A tabled? Part A tabled. Part B. Any questions on Part B?
Is this now up to page 51 or is page 50 covered by Part B? Am I correct?
Yes.
Honourable members, Part B is up until the landscape in George.
Yes. Okay. Thank you. Can I just start? Thank you very much. In terms of trade promotion, I do know that you attract people to come and attend fairs in South Africa, etc. But I don't know if you were here when I referred to it earlier, that there are a lot of incentives provided by the central government, including support for potential exporters to go overseas and take part in fairs in other countries. And it seems to me as if the only cost for the potential exporter is to get him or herself there, as well as their marketing material, and that the arrangements, the payment for the stall, etc., will be paid. And my question is just, when you speak of trade promotion, to what extent do you still see the traditional trade fair as important as an initiative that's deserving of your support? And how do you see that future for Western Cape export? Then the second one, Chair, in terms of the performance. In your introduction, you referred to the uniqueness of Westgrow, and by the way, I must agree with what you also stated in some of your documentation, that Westgrow has become a very well-known and positive brand name in itself. But how do you balance your interest between that of the city of Cape Town, the bigger towns, which also contribute to your income, and I presume, he gets the first bite of the cherry or the service, and other smaller rural areas of the Western Cape that may also be potential, but that do not contribute directly to Westgrow's income. Thank you.
Chair, my question is on page 30 on the strategic objections under your performance appraisal. I see you have performed well on the first performance appraisal and the last one, but the middle two, there are concerns. That can you elaborate on us in terms of your underperformance or whatever performance that you are actually at as to what are the reasons for? And also on page 31, where you have not met your target on performance indicator 1.1.3. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Any other questions? Move on, Councillor.
Thank you, Chair. Page 26. I think what of the entity. If you can just elaborate on contact management, if you look, what does that mean? And then on page 31, I think 1.1.1.1.4. Okay, what I'm trying to understand here, I think it's on the planned target. Well, if I look at the planned target, and I think this was also my comment as a being in the other department, and the minister, because he's here, also can give an opinion on this. I think if one looks at, let's use 1.1.3 for example, the previous baseline of the agency says that they have achieved 2.69 days. And then you then have a target, you know, that is almost closer there, which is almost 2 days. Then you sort of achieve 2.49. So I'm trying to understand here, the actual target setting, you know, does it consider the past performance and the extent to which in this particular one, whether there was, as is indicated here, what is the extent of the challenge that resulted to this 0.51 day deviation?
And then on page 34, on page 34,
on page 34, I think I just want to get a sense, and this is a, once again, a general issue of mine with my pedestrian understanding, you know, of its very complex economic issues. I'm always struggling to understand the value, the rent value of investment versus the number of jobs. And if I can just be clarified, maybe conceptually and others using this particular project. But as you can see, I mean, there's not necessarily an average out of the number of jobs versus the value of the investment. But what drives these kind of numbers? Because when one looks at the type of committed investment project value, you know, you see there one is 4,250,000 against one job, another one, you know, about 1 billion against 150 jobs. So I'm just trying to understand the rationale, and I'm raising this because almost, and I think also the Premier and the Minister also, when they speak, and I know even the President of the country, this issue of securing investment as a way of, you know, unlocking job opportunities is something that, you know, is a growth strategy. But I'm always puzzled when I look at the value of the investment and the minute number of jobs that one looks at. Perhaps somebody can clarify and educate me about this particular relationship. I'll stop there for now.
Thank you. And on permission, could you just also place the mic in front of you so it can go off? Thank you. I'm going to hand over now to the CEO.
Thanks, Chair. I'll do a quick scan across those issues, but I will ask Yao, our Chief Business Officer, Dean and Cooney, who work on that export promotion area, to answer Honourable Van der Westhuizen, particularly in terms of our experience working with the DTI on outward selling missions, which is just one part of our strategy, and I think they've got a lot of experience there. The second is, how do we balance the interests of the various towns and regions and municipalities across the whole of the Western Cape? The very simple answer is, it is a complex balancing act, which I suspect is why most of the other provinces try and do things more in silos, but we believe by marketing the whole of the Western Cape together, along with the strength of the city of Cape Town, you maximize benefits for both. If you think about the metro area of Cape Town, it excludes much of the real economic drivers of the Western Cape and the tourism drivers. It excludes the Winelands, it excludes the Saldanha Bay Industrial Development Zone, it excludes the Garden Route, it excludes the agricultural potential and output of the Overberg. So we believe that when you package the broader Western Cape economic and tourism opportunity alongside the strength of Cape Town, both win. All of the small towns, all of the districts and the local municipalities benefit from being marketed alongside Cape Town, and Cape Town benefits from being marketed alongside the broader offer across the province. So it's what we believe is a win-win, but it is a complex balancing act, as you reflect. The questions from Honourable Makamba Gotcha on 30 and 31, so those three targets that were mentioned, the two middle ones on page 30, those were areas where we exceeded the target. So in a sense, we're looking at network downtime. We tried to make sure we had less than a four-hour downtime, and actually, sorry, we exceeded that by 2 minutes. So we achieved a total of 4 hours and 2 minutes instead of 4 hours, which certainly not exactly correct, but I don't think it's really a major issue. And then on the staff morale, we actually exceeded the target. We hoped to get 75% staff satisfaction and ended up with 80%. The same applies to on page 31113, where we achieved a slightly better turnaround time on workflows, and Honorable Nkondla also asked about that particular target. Basically, we're trying to make sure we run an efficient operation. CFO is welcome to come in here if she's inspired to. But we believe a turnaround time on workflows, which is our procurement system, that 3 days is pretty much a stretch target. It's enough time to make sure you get it done properly, but not so much time that you're taking forever to procure things. So the fact that we had a target of 3 days and we achieved slightly less than 3 days, we think is an acceptable result, and almost certainly next year we will table another 3 day target. It's a reasonable amount of time to process the workflow. You also asked on the Wimba on page 26 about the contact management. This is an area where technology is increasingly able to help you manage the client relationship. And we're pleased to announce that in the last few weeks we implemented a new holistic CRM system, customer relationship management system, that will give us a single view of our clients. So we will, as an agency, we will manage the client information, whether they are working as an investment client or whether we're talking to them about getting into exports or even on the tourism side, etc. So we've revised our SWOT analysis, and certainly contact management is no longer on that list. The last question is on page 34, the committed investments. I'm not sure if Yao or James Milne, who heads our investment team, wants to come in, but the bottom line is, if you do the averaging out on our investment that we landed last year, it's about 3 million rand investments to create a job. What that reflects is a degree of capital intensiveness. It's how much capital an investor is deploying versus the number of additional labor units that they're adding. And it does vary year by year, and it certainly varies sector by sector. Some sectors are incredibly capital intensive. Many of the members would have been to the Bocomo factory up the West Coast where they make Weet-Bix. It's an extraordinary experience because there's very, very little labor. It's a huge value-adding facility, but it's essentially entirely mechanized. The benefit from that factory is that they're adding huge value to our wheat product, and they're exporting that all over Africa and the world. So the knock-on job impact is huge. The actual jobs employed in the facility are relatively few. So when we're asking for a job impact on these committed investments, we're asking for direct jobs created at the factories. I know our Chief Research Officer Cornelius has also done some work on the downstream job impact from these investments, so feel free to come in there as well, but perhaps we should start with the export question, Jan Dean.
Thank you, Honourable Member. If I can, with the export. So there are a couple of angles that we take in terms of promoting Western Cape exports, and the DTI missions form quite a strong platform or backbone in terms of the missions that we undertake. So they normally send us a list of missions that they'll be undertaking during the year, and on the back of that we will plan around that. On that basis as well, we are able to, I suppose, use some of the incentives, but it's capped for us. So there are some incentives that we can utilize for our companies to go into the market. So the trade missions are very key for us. But there are also missions that the DTI don't do, which we also do. We identify with the help of our IP team countries where our Western Cape products will do well in. So we use some sort of technological DSM as well as the knowledge that the team gives us to also plan some of our trips going forward as well. Further to that, we also invite some buyers to come into this part of the world to see. We find that easier that if a buyer gets into the country, we can move them around to different producers easier. I think in the next 5 years as well, we've been speaking quite a lot with the department in terms of using exports as a basis, and we're hoping that that will also help in terms of job numbers, because investment is hard. Like to get somebody to move their capital from where it is to our country requires a lot to be done. Some of it is not controlled by us. So investment will keep pushing, and we will still do well, but we find that for us to move the needle now, exports might be a way forward, and we are going to be focusing a whole lot more on exports for the next 5 years to see how we can use that to grow the economy and also create jobs. I'm hoping that answers some of your questions. I just wanted to add as well, so on the back of our export mission as well, we've also got two very key things that we're working on as part of Project Felisa, which is the halal exports and also the wine exports, and that's not with the DTI, generally it's just us figuring out which markets our products would do well in. I'm sorry, Dean, do you have anything else there?
Thank you, Honourable Member, for your question. Your question is an interesting one, whether or not we would continue doing exhibitions. Definitely, I think so. Over the next 5 to 10 years, I don't think that the platform for trading is going to change significantly. We only do trade exhibitions in Europe, North America, sometimes in South America, and in Asia. In Africa, that platform is somewhat still developing, so we would do straight outward selling missions and set up B2B companies, meetings for companies in the Western Cape with buyers, importers, and distributors. But that exhibition space pretty much in those regions I've mentioned will remain there for time to come. We obviously have to be cognizant of the fact that trade and exports is changing globally. It's becoming more digitized. There are new technologies being introduced like blockchain. And us as Westro, we are looking internally as to how do we bring these new digital platforms into how we promote exports in the province. So there's a lot of internal consultations that are going on currently, which would essentially complement the existing work that we are doing. We've also been approached by a number of service providers to implement and install a digital platform linked to Westro's website. So ultimately, these new initiatives are going to boost existing trade missions and platforms that we currently engage with.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you for that response. It was my privilege to be in Russia last year and during the visit to be invited by the mission there, South African mission, to go to one of the local food fairs, where some of the Western Cape exporters or potential exporters were exhibiting. Now, you deal with, to a large extent, with what I would say physical goods and the export of physical goods. But there's another field that surprises me, and that is the potential for intellectual export in terms of website design, e-learning development, for which some companies in South Africa have had quite good exposure, and also the development of applications. I happen to know a number of people working in Stellenbosch Technopark, which is a completely different kind of export of intellectual services, if I can call it like that. And my question is also, because I don't really pick that up in your report, that is also a potential focus. Now, do you have any idea of how important that may be? It seems to me that and that's a field in which one's biggest competitor might be India. But it seems to me as if South Africa might have a competitive advantage in that regard, in that some of our young kids are really well trained and able to compete with international software development, etc. Is that a field in which you see economic growth and where we could see Westro perhaps also supporting?
Yes, definitely. I think you...
I want to take on Honourable Kondo's question.
Honourable
Kondo?
Okay, thank you, Chair. And thank you for the explanation. I'm actually more educated on the matter.
appreciate that. And I think the notion of the knock-on or downstream effect, I think, becomes important. Maybe somewhere, somehow, in the communication, we need to find a way. Because I think, as you are explaining now to my simple pedestrian mind, that at a particular point, an investment that arrives may be, you know, infrastructure intensive, and they may not necessarily be labor for that particular or for the reporting year, but into the future. So maybe, Minister, these are things that in the communication we need to sort of consider, you know, to try and bring them in. Because yes, the reporting requires of us to say the number of direct jobs in the now, but how do we also communicate, you know, that long-term knock-on effect? And I think for me, the importance also, I'm not sure the extent to which, in terms of the job data, as I pick up in the report, that the source is more the investor agreements that Westgro gets in. This is where we pick up these direct job numbers. Now, I'm trying then as a question to understand, will some of these also be found in your status A labor force survey, you know, in terms of their own reporting? Will they be picked up in that system in terms of the people that then get to be employed?
Thank you.
Thanks, Chair. So I, on the services exports, it's a new area that Westco has been focusing on for the last few years. It makes a lot of sense for the Western Cape. We're about 70% export, services oriented in terms of output for the province. So we're a services economy in a very real sense, and about three quarters of our jobs are in the services space. So I'm sure Dina will comment on our service export strategy that we've implemented, and that obviously chief amongst the services exports is actually the film industry. So I know Monica, who runs our film and media promotion team, wants to come in as well. Then on the question around the labour-intensive nature of investments, the Honourable Kondlo, I would say, Cornelius can please come in as well, but I would think the labour force survey is measuring the supply side of the labour market. It's measuring at a kind of retail level, at an individual level, at a household level, who has employment. And what you would find, even though that's a comprehensive survey, certainly the demand side indicator that you get when you ask a company how many jobs they've created, you would almost certainly be able to track a broad trend in the same direction. If we're obviously not trying to do a comprehensive survey of companies, we're just measuring the number of investments that we land and the jobs that they create. But certainly if there's a positive job trend in the Westgro declared job numbers, you would anticipate that the labour force survey would start to show a similar trend. But maybe I'm overstating it. Maybe Cornelius has a comment on that as well. But let's start with services experts.
Thanks, Tim. The Honourable Member is absolutely correct. Services are a fundamental part of the Western Cape economy. As Tim notes, it comprises of 74% of economic activity in and around Cape Town. We've spent the last year and a half developing a services export strategy, and what you'll see going forward from next financial year is out of that 40 to 45 international trade missions we run each year, we want to move to a stage where at least half of them are in the services space. And we've been able to, through dedicated research, been able to pinpoint areas where we want to focus. And one is software as a service, which speaks to some of those elements that you mentioned. The other is business process outsourcing. How do we take that offering out to the world and create more jobs by landing more call centers in the Western Cape? And the third one that we're looking at that is growing quite significantly is agri-tech. And that is an easy solution that can be adapted to other parts of the continent or to the rest of Africa. So we've done extensive work as to where we should be playing in the services market, and just last month we started engaging the DTI on our services strategy and how does that link to national government services strategy. Because I think overall as a country, as South Africa, we lag in far behind other economies, other developing economies, especially the BRICS economies when it comes to services exports. Their exports comprise between 60 to 70% of services being exported, and we're still lagging way behind. So there's a lot of work to be done, there's a lot of consultations to be had, but we definitely see the opportunity and we are moving forward on it.
Honorable Member, Chair, thanks Kim. I'm very excited about services, film and media, and e-learning especially is part of that spectrum. We look at the whole value chain. Animation, gaming, augmented reality, virtual reality, and now, it's ever-changing. It's 4IR. We don't even know what's going to be invented in the next few months. But when I go into markets, and you mentioned markets in the earlier question, we are not only going to important markets, sometimes through the support of the DTI, but less and less so in this space, because the definition of this space is difficult for the DTI. So they're cutting back on the SAS, the sector-specific scheme, and only allowing any support going into the bigger markets. But what we're finding is that we're growing our industry events here. So Cape Town International Animation Festival, which has a huge e-learning space, e-gaming is picking up there as well, which is bigger. I'm sure all of you watched the Boca this weekend. Well, I'm telling you that e-sports is bigger than all live sports at the present moment. So this is the space we want to be in. This is the Silicon Cape between here and Stellenbosch, according to the Endeavor report. And we're looking at it. I went to Annecy, the largest animation festival in the world, 2 years ago with some of the colleagues from the Innovis Institute. And they made a very positive impression there with some of the blockchain products that have since gone and sold. I think they had 25 companies that could have been related to this space. So we're seeing that, we're trying to help them, but what we really want to do is attract those buyers here in the Cape Town International Animation Festival, which had 2,000 industry people last year, has now combined with Comic-Con, so it'll have more public facing, and it will be, they think, around 20,000 people taking over the Cape Town Stadium next year in May for the 3 days. And one floor will be all of the festival activations, including exhibition space for our creatives. And the rest will be a celebration of the entertainment IP, and hopefully some franchises will come out of that. And we know the Marvel case, they end up becoming a movie franchise and then toys and so forth. So we have comic books right through. So we have people doing work right now and winning awards just with a pen and paper, right through to the blockchain, right through to the e-learning like Sea Monster, which is one of the world leading in its space, and we're going to see more and more of that as we change to the 4IR economy, and we're very pleased to help with that. Thank you. Any follow-up questions?
Thank you very much, and thank you, and it's exciting to hear that it's already receiving your attention, and it has been for a while. My last question then just also the whole issue of conferencing. It seems to me as if the Cape Town International Conference Centre has been one of the success stories and an investment which really also accelerated growth of that specific tourism market for the Western Cape. Obviously we know that they are planning to expand, etc. But I'm also thinking of other venues and perhaps a lack of venues in my lay estimate, and I was just wondering whether you have done any research in that regard as to the potential growth, perhaps somewhat outside the city of Cape Town itself, for conference venues, etc. I do know there are a number, but it seems to me many of them are still quite limited in the number of people that they can accommodate. Thank you, Chief.
Thank you. Before I take on one control, the future is, I was going to just refer to the specific page because I can't find where you're referring to, please. Honorable control.
Okay,
Honourable Mkhonto, just a reminder of the mic.
Yeah. I'm used to speaking through a loudhailer, so I've been upgraded here, so pardon me, Chair. On page 37, just wanted to understand on the one-stop shop which focuses, among others, on the red tape reduction. What is the interface between the one that WESCO runs, and I'm not sure it will be whether also the department has got its own red tape unit. And I know, for example, also the city has got one. Now, what's the interface between these, and whether what is mentioned, I think I've seen there in the SWAT, also there was a mention of duplication of efforts. Will this be also in one space where you've got almost similar functions and people actually running for the same things? Because I can imagine if a project comes to WESCO, surely you have to talk to the department and still talk to the city, because most of those projects are in the city. And what kind of, till to date, I think, what kind of issues have you been dealing with, in particular the challenges that you are still meeting, if any, you know, with the national department? I had, I think, in the previous conversation, HOD mentioning Home Affairs as an example, with their interesting relationship, although improving. I'm just wanting to understand what are some of those challenges and how are they being mitigated, you know, with the national department. Then my second one is on page 46, in terms of your, amongst others, the trade market. If I look especially on the Halal one, I see that the number of companies that were supported is 5 on the different trips. Is it the same companies, or it's different 5 companies in these different destinations that are listed here on page 46? And just if you do have that information at this point, what has been the feedback? Because I'm assuming that you have taken some companies from the province to these trade markets. What have been, you know, some of the feedback from those companies, and any, you know, sort of business or trade, actual trade that has taken place through trade market? And then I think those are the two for now.
Thank you.
Thanks, Chair. On the question of business tourism, so the MICE space, meetings, incentives, conferences and exhibitions, I'm very aware that I'm flanked by two board members of the CTICC, the HND and our CFO. They both sit on that board. But the reason why Corné Koch runs the Convention Bureau for Cape Town and the Western Cape is because the way the industry is structured is the sales team for the destination is not linked to any particular assets. So obviously CTICC is the big one, and they've actually recently finished that expansion. But we're a kind of venue neutral sales operation for the destination. So Corné can reflect on the efforts to land conferences outside of the CTICC. Then Honourable Mkhondlo, there were two questions. The one on the Cape Investor Centre, the one-stop shop. Yao Petra, it falls within his area, so I'll ask him to answer it. And then on the Halal missions on 46, perhaps Dinan, do you want to come in on it?
Thank you. So in terms of, I think in terms of the conference space, there's something to do with context. The type of conferences from an international perspective that we attract, we're really lucky. We attract about half of the South African international conferences into the Western Cape. They are mainly large conferences, so they would be quite, in terms of venue space and size, into the city. Your other narrative that you work with internationally is how do you establish second-tier cities in countries, and you work closely with Stellenbosch at the moment. Because of the knowledge hub they've got there with the university, they're an ideal second tier city. We work very closely with their Visitor Information Office, or the Stellenbosch, the new entity there, as well as Innovis, which is Stellenbosch University's commercial arm, and the university. And the ask there is that how can you attract and how do you use the town to put in large conferences, because you can, there's models to do that. So that's currently underway. We've been working with them for the last 2 years. It takes quite a while to establish destinations like that. We work already on bids of 2024, so we sort of work on a 3 to 5 year cycle to land conferencing into that. The other thing in terms of the space is that you then look at what else is in the province and it's available, and what the province offers in terms of our leisure offering is very lucrative to our incentive market. So that's also a product of business tourism, incentive travel, and the leverage there is that your region's leverage, because people, the groups come and they spend 1 or 2 days in the city, and then they move out to the region to experience the region as a leisure tourist, but part of a business tourism itinerary. So I know that there are plans to look into what else we can look into the province, but that is not obviously within our mandate. That's an economic decision and a financial decision to be taken from the province as whether to build a secondary convention centre. I might just add that convention centre across the world is in a very competing space. So you've got to see how do you convert, and that's the work that we're doing, the business tourists up here, and how do you convert that into rather a trade and investing opportunity for the province using the content industry as a conduit for that.
Sorry, Connect, if I can just come in on the target setting for the city ICC. There is a challenge currently where the number of meetings is the current target that the city sets for the city ICC, and that causes them to compete with the other smaller operators. So we are working with the city to try and work on size of the meetings, because that space can accommodate large size and there's no need for them to be targeting the smaller meetings when there's other areas in the rest of the Western Cape that can do the smaller meetings. So that is a conversation that's in progress.
Thank you for the question regarding the Investor Centre and the One-Stop Shop. So the Red Tape units, as well as the City of Cape Town, are both partners in the One-Stop Shop, so they sit there because there's certain things that we can't deal with that they deal with. So we work very closely with them, and there's no duplication in that sense. The City of Cape Town has set up their own one-stop shop, but they focus more on the smaller companies. So generally the relationship is if somebody goes to the one-stop shop in the City of Cape Town and doesn't work, it doesn't fit there, they'll bring them to us. We'll be about maybe 200 meters from each other. And if we have somebody who's requesting something which we can't assist them with, we just pass it to us. So there's quite a bit of symbiotic relationship between the two of us. In terms of the challenges, like there are challenges which we constantly feedback with the GTI, and I think the biggest one is the fact that there's no MOU between the GTI and the national agencies that need to be in the one-stop shop, right? So that I think the MOU or a service level agreement would actually dictate what kind of service these entities must provide to people that come through the one-stop shop. You can't have the same service that that people generally have, because then there's no use of having a one-stop shop, it's just another stop shop. So we're constantly feeding back information to the national one-stop shop to see how we can rectify this, and they are discussing this. It's been discussed for the last 2 years or so. But also another thing is we work very closely with other one-stop shops. So we're quite closely with KZN as well as with Gauteng. And we're just trying to see how we can actually better affect the space that we've been given, because it's quite a big investment that's been put there, and we need to find a way to operationalize it irrespective of the MOUs. So we work closely amongst ourselves, and we also try and learn from other countries that have gone further, like for example Mauritius, who had a one-stop shop which was a physical one, but then they've introduced technology which I suppose assists them in being more effective. So we get those feedbacks those report backs, and we pass them on. And it's great, but it's a challenge. Like Homelessness, for example, I don't think it's anyone's secret here, but working with Home Affairs, it's a challenge. And we keep giving feedback, and hopefully we will we'll get resolution on that. I mean, I suppose we're getting closer because now they respond to emails, which is still closer than we've been for the last couple of months. Thank you.
Thank you. Any follow-up questions? Okay. Can I consider Part B tabled?
Part B is tabled.
So we do need to deal with page 46 and number of companies supported.
Thank you, Honourable Member. The table you're looking at on page 46 relates to our halal export promotion missions. It's a ring fence program. We receive the money from DDEF, so it's sort of tied to our trade promotion program, but it's also a project on itself. And because of the sizable nature of that project, we are able to fund companies to go with us on these missions. So each mission, we're able to allocate funding for 5 companies, whether it be flights or accommodation or paying for the stand itself. And each mission will have 5 different companies going. There's never the same companies it does sometimes happen, but not consistently. We're always in the game to diversify the types of companies that we work with. I think the new district unit that's been set up will also bode well in that regard. We did also last year take companies from Saldanha Bay on a mission to Nigeria. Overall, our halal exports globally are doing exceptionally well. There's high demand for our products because of the quality, and we've seen that also at Africa Halal Week, which we hosted a couple of weeks ago, where we brought in 25 international buyers of halal certified products. I have a few figures here in front of me. The mission to Cameroon yielded 68 million in export deals. Senegal yielded 175 million. Nigeria yielded 320 million. And the UAE and Saudi Arabia was close to 600 million. So this is a projection of exports over a 5-year period. So you just got to take it in that context, that it's over a number of years that these deals are being calculated at. Thank you.
All done. Can I table Part B? Part B is tabled. Let us go to Part B. Part B is page 81 to 85. It is right after the Vineyard in Tolbuch. Any questions? No questions. Going once. No questions going twice. Can I consider Part D tabled? Part D is tabled. I'm going to now open the floor for if there's anyone from the community with questions. I forgot to ask the same question for the previous, but because we have the HOD here, if it doesn't refer to the annual report, we're going to just refer it to the department. But if it's referring to the annual report, we will take the question. Anyone from the community? Mr. Mbiko. If we can just put one of the mics on for Mr. Mbiko, please.
Thank you, madam. My name is Mlandele Mbiko. I'm from the Nyanga Tourism Park. I'm going to talk on the report of the accounting officer on page 11, paragraph, I think it's different. It deals with the red tape reduction unit. Last year, it was agreed that the department must unlock unnecessary red tape that stifles Nazi economic growth and hamper the small business and micro-Nazi enterprises from thriving in the economy. What steps has already been taken by the department in regard to that issue? The second one is paragraph 7, dealing with small businesses. In Nyanga, we have more than 280 informal traders, and who are deliberately not going to register because of the costly process. They claim that the process is costly in terms of cost associated with the registration fees. employment of an accountant, proper bookkeeping and tax papers and other related matters. How is the government going to engage these people? Because these people are prospective taxpayers. They can increase your tax revenue. What is the government doing about that? The second one is on page 32. About the digital economy. In our area, first I must thank the Western Cape government. The city of Cape Town for introducing Smart Cape. In Nyanga, we've got only one library, we have 5 computers. We talk about the digital economy. Why? Last week we had a problem. We had a discussion with the Department of Education in regard to the e-learning. In our, we have more than 7 schools in my area without ICT labs. How are you going to develop the economy in that industry if it's not going to be started at school level? That is our problem. The other one is on page 34, I think it's the last paragraph in regard to, alcohol harms the reduction chain. We have a problem still with the Department of, with the Western Cape government in regard to prioritizing Langa and Nyanga when it comes to tourism. Nyanga was established in 1946, and we've got an area there which we have named as, it's a Taverners, it's STIP, Safe Taverners Pilot Area. In that area we've got 3 taverns, we've got businesses, we've got everything. Our taverns are not regulated only by the liquor board, are regulated by the street committees as well. In that area you don't see a side roaming around the streets in proximity of a tavern. We want to know what is the government doing about that. In particular, the people who are operating in Kumya, which is the Mayoral Urban Regeneration Program and the VPUU. This program has already been started in Kalicha. What about in Kumya? Where in Kumya is it being implemented? And in Nyanga, when it comes to spaces, I understand the government is already complaining about spaces. In Nyanga, we've got empty spaces, underutilized spaces, which are used for crime and activities. Why not the government, including the city of Cape Town, utilizes that for economic activities? Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Mbito. Mr. Vika, I know, is a very active citizen of his community in the Nyanga area. HID?
Chair, I don't have the specifics answers to what Mr. Vickers asked for. Obviously, we, through the department, we can give him those specifics with regards to what specific steps have been taken to assist small businesses, although in general terms, SMMEs are probably the biggest beneficiaries of our red tape reduction area. We've assisted well over 5,500 businesses over the last couple of years since the unit has been in progress, and the resolution rate has been significantly substantial. And they do vary from permitting issues to issues with regards to, I've tried to register my business but I wasn't able to, and then we interface with the SIPC company for registration. But I think the specifics that that's been asked, that I'd like to ask if the member can table that, the member of the board can table that with us, and we can respond to that. Small business support, I think that has been clearly articulated in the previous session as well, that we support small businesses not only with access to markets but also with access to the funding mechanisms that is within the national space. So we do have an interface with the Department of Small Business where the small enterprise financing agency is located. I mean, largely that is a role that they play. you know, we can assist to see why, if applications have been made. And again, it's the issue. On every case, we need to actually get what is the application. So again, I want to look specific. I may ask Ms. Johnston to maybe just give a brief response to digital economy, because it's an area that we've been very much involved in. And the alcohol harm reduction, we had that particular discussion earlier on where the liquor licensing and the ability of businesses within the liquor trade is with the Department of Community Safety. It is an issue that I think is, as I explained previously, it comes up quite a bit on licensing and red tape issues around licensing for liquor businesses that we've been involved in. And I'm sure Mr. Tofi will answer on the Langa tourism issue, because I know there's been some work that we've been looking at in that space. I can just ask Joe on the green, on the digital economy, and Rashid on the tourism side.
Thank you very much, Chidi. Dico, there are two major initiatives that the department is driving with regards to digital economy. Right? So we understand that in order to promote the tech industry, it's important that citizens also have access, digitally literate, digitally relevant, because that makes them more employable. So there are a number of things that we are doing. So one, we have a jump platform, we go to BizJump. It's essentially how informal and SME businesses can actually access all information that is relevant, how to improve your business. It allows for a self-assessment to say what are your challenges and how best to solve it. So it gives you information, it will tell you where you can get advice. So it basically provides a reference point of how you can get help within the Western Cape, drawing on from both local, provincial, as well as national stakeholders and support institutions and agencies. So that's the first thing. We're in the process of converting that from an online platform also to an app that makes it easier for SMEs. That's the one thing, and there's a wealth of information that's on there. The second is around the school. So we're looking at a holistic pipeline around digital skills. So right from my end, from the bottom to the high end, and we understand there's a pipeline. So you can't become a data scientist unless you actually get exposed to a computer and you can do the basics. With the result is there are two entry points that we have. One is via the school. So at the moment we are working with the schools as well as with industries about how you can get after school programs rolled out across the province. Right? So we're starting with a pilot, but the intention is eventually to try and reach many schools with a good geographic area. But you also don't have a metro, non-metro divide. So it's about making sure that's accessible to everybody. And with respect to that we've supported the Department of Education in terms of the rollout of the infrastructure. And we understand that they're rolling out the devices. So Nyanga should be able to have a bigger lab with time as the Department of Education's budget is concerned. But we're also looking at introducing after-school programs so that there's also additional support to the children and the pupils with regards to programs, etc. It will also hopefully make them more employable the moment that they're starting emerging from the school system.
Thank you, Chair. I chatted to Mr. Mbiko earlier. I'm head up for one of the economic war rooms in the provincial government, which focuses particularly on informal light manufacturing. And we're actually looking for organizations like the one in Nyanga to engage with, to see where are the actual entry points where we can assist small businesses, particularly with a made local light manufacturing bent. And the advantage of these war rooms is we've managed to sit along with city and province to do exactly what you said, so is identify plots of land which are both unutilized and underutilized, and to identify businesses who could benefit from being in a light industrial area. So I really will commit to engaging with this organization to see if they can be locked into that program, which will identify land and all the sort of business support that we can crowd in. So I think that's a real opportunity to make a difference in those areas. So it certainly has been identified, and it's been very much in line. You'll see things spoken about it in sort of weeks rather than years or months. HOD, on the tourism side, I know that we, again by way of introduction, I would love to connect you to Cape Town Tourism, to the ICASI program, where they speak with local communities in townships and create these network opportunities with large businesses on the supply side, who like Springbok Atlas and other people, to demonstrate what tourism product you have. So on that level, we would like to assist you. And the last thing is, we're doing a tourism master plan at the moment, which really looks at how we do tourism development and promotion in the next 20 years in the Western Cape. And one of those is to assist small businesses to create products that are saleable. So it's about product support, developing those tourism products in those areas to be saleable and to be connected to various routes and packages. So, yeah, more forward-looking, but that's the kind of commitment that I can make to make sure we assist the member of the public. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Mbeki. Do you have any follow-up questions?
No, thank you. I'm satisfied because Manuel has already spoken to me.
Okay.
Yes, I don't want to preempt this process for the thing.
That's okay. I'm also going to ask that the respective departmental officials just liaise with Mr. Mbeko, please, regarding any extra information that has not been provided to him today, or to link him to the respective programs where he can take the information to. Would that be okay? Mr. Mbeko? Would that be satisfactory? No problem. Are there any other community members who would like to ask a question? None? Okay, we are going to break for 15 minutes before we hear the next presentation. Thank you to Wesco for taking out the report today, and thank you for the engagement today.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Some delays in what I presume is the construction work of the facilities that you want to make available to investors, to business people.
And I was just wondering whether, and I'm referring to page 49, Chair, to respond to your earlier request that I respond to specific phrases. For example, the revenue collection, which was estimated at an rounding of 360,000, only rendered about 33,000, which, you know, taking into account that rent is normally collected on a monthly basis, tells me that in my estimate, you know, you're expected to have about 12 months of income, and you've only had 1 month of income. This figure being about 1 month, one twelfth of the estimate. And my question is just, where are we in terms of those delays? Have you been? It's quite often very difficult to catch up, and to make up time once you've experienced such delays. Have you been able to fast track? Have you been able to catch up? And what is the position at this point in time and going forward? Thank you. So that's my first one, Chair. I don't know if you want me to also refer to the second.
No.
Good. That is all on part B. Thank you, Chair.
Part B is between pages 30 and 49. Anurban Kota, if you just use the mic, just so we can have everything on record.
Yeah. Okay, Chair. I just wanted to check whether the ease of doing business complex, has it been finalized? And if so, what has been the cost of it, and what would be the relationship of this particular unit? I'm not sure whether there will be people from Saldanha ITZ versus the other one that is within West. And I'm asking this question because even earlier on, I asked about these many red tape units, you know, that we're having, to also avoid a duplication. So if I can get clarity on that. And then, I think supposed to page 38.
Okay,
which is my preparation was based on the. So now I think I'm a bit misled here. Sure. I don't know how I'm gonna deal with that, because one prepared unit what was submitted to us. But in any way, one will have to navigate now, because I'm looking at this information and what was in the document that we're given. So I don't know how we're going to manage that. Let me stop there before but I know the page that I was looking at, that's why I'm looking at the ease of doing business, because I know they spoke about a complex, you know, and ease of doing business complex. That's why I'm asking whether it has been completed.
Thank you. I will address the two different reports in our committee business as well, because I found that the respective reports were tabled on time, but it was a parliamentary fault that we got the different reports. So I'll address that in our committee business, as it's not the fault of Saldanha Bay. I'll give the CEO.
Thank you, Chair and committee members. So with reference to the first question on the Part B, forgive me, I'm having a bit of a cold today. This is the figures from the revenue collection on page 49. The delay in the estimate to the actual amount collected is because of longer tenant lease negotiations that we anticipated. Also, I think for the record, we did not for this financial year put a target on revenue collection, because we were in a build-up and establishment phase. So the estimate of revenue collection is just an estimate, one target for the year. And that pertained to some of the tenants, the operational tenants, needing interfaces with the Port Authority required. So that's why the figure is less than the estimate. And in terms of the question on the infrastructure delays, so yes, we have experienced infrastructure delays on the servicing of the port land, and that's also another reason for the delay in the revenue collection, because that tenant wanted to establish themselves in the port land, and then we were still putting in services in the land. And the other project that was delayed is the access complex, which is the Easy Doing Business complex that the other member referred to. So we have new estimations on the completion dates, and we are managing those projects quite diligently and quite proactively with the construction team, as well as the professional team that's managing those projects. The other strategy that we put in place is that the localization platforms that we put in place do it to make sure that there is maximum localization from those projects. So I think that strategy, as I tabled it at the previous engagement that we had of the project management team with local subcontractors, is a very dynamic process, and it is really bearing fruit in terms of the realization of local spend, but it's a learning process between the main contractor, the professional teams, ourselves, and the local contractor as well. So we are putting strategies in place in order to ensure that those completion timelines are met for this new financial year for those projects. I think in terms of the other member's question on the Easy Doing Business complex, so the budget for that building is 134 million about, that was funding that was secured from the DTI ETZ fund. Also, I think to raise the question, and when I heard the question to Westgro, I knew that this was coming for us as well. So I think the key fundamental is that the Easy Doing Business unit in the IDZ is specifically to create an enabling business environment in the IDZ, because we will have customs control regime. So our red tape is much different from anybody who wants to do an investment in the city of Cape Town or the Western Cape in general. It's specific legislation that needs to be applied because we are now a customs control area. So that requires a dedicated team to enable that environment in the zone. So that's why we have and will continue to have an Easy Doing Business unit. And we wholeheartedly work with Westgro as well as the province when the RegTech matters are universal across the three contexts. So for example, the transport issues and such like. So that we work all together on that because they overlay each other. But certainly the RegTech and Easy Doing Business environment will be specific, that our tenants will experience will be specific for the IDZ. The completion date of the project. So the completion estimates for the servicing of the TNPA land is at the end of this financial year, as well as the access complex.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you very much for that response. And thank you, Dr. Stachman, for insisting that we have a little bit more clarity. But still, I don't know what was the extent of the delays. My question was, have you been able to make up time in that regard? What is the kind of revenue that we can expect to see now? Please, have you got, for example, empty spaces that, you know, you're still waiting for people to come and take up that space? What percentage of that is there? Please, Chair, if we can get some more detailed responses than just saying yes, there have been delays and there have been negotiations and so on. I'm convinced that the CEO would be able to give us, you know, far more definite indications of where we are, and you know,
what caused the delays? You know, is it municipal planning processes that were longer? Is it other infrastructure outside of your control? We're really in the dark, and I think the whole idea of an annual performance report is to enlighten us, to allow the people that engage with the report to get a picture of what is really there and why have there been serious deviations. Thank you.
Thank you. Alban Costa?
Maybe just a follow-up check on the first one. I get the answer from the CEO, and I'm satisfied with the finding and at what point will the RATIP unit come in. Just wanted to check, what are the kind of issues now that you are dealing with within the unit? If you can just give them some detail of the type of issues that you have to deal with, which obviously the complex is just the physical infrastructure that will be there to continue that work, but also the extent to which some of the issues that you deal with, if any, come from your local enterprises, because obviously partly I'm assuming, and you'll correct me if I'm wrong, that you also, engaging with international companies that are, working within international standards, if you have to then facilitate also with those that want to participate, how do we ensure, will that type of issues fall into the other program, which is your enterprise, on how you help those people meet up the standards and the compliance requirements, of some of those opportunities that they would like to participate in. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair Members. So I'd like to, on page 47, where that specific indicator of the completion of the infrastructure phase. So the comment that was given is that there was late commencement of the project, and to go into detail on that, so one of the projects, servicing the port land required us to conclude the lease with the PNPA first. And that was a protracted, lengthy negotiation. And so the board took the decision and gave the instruction that we cannot allow the contractor to commence on site without security of the land. So that delay had a knock-on effect on the whole construction time frame of that project. Then there were further delays experienced late last year with some of the community protests that happened in Saldana. And where that pertains to us, and following from our management and our response to those community protests, those local platforms were established to ensure that everyone who wishes to participate in our construction project has a platform on which to hear and get information on the opportunities coming from this project. This is a new, very innovative way of managing a construction project. And so there have been some teething problems. Trust needs to be built between all of the stakeholders to ensure that they can build a relationship in the contract. That has had an effect on the delays in the project. So delays have occurred because of the late commencement of the project, and then due to the community protests. And in our response to the community protests is to ensure that more consultation and awareness happens, and those take time. So those delays are being managed now through a very proactive and construction management framework, if I can say, in that perspective. So we foresee that those projects will be, and that's why the shifted out date to the end of this financial year for the completion date for those projects. So I hope that's given the member more clarity on why the delays and what we are doing to manage them. I think also the members' comments on the site itself, so the
part of the sites that we had been serviced, that had been serviced over the years, those are available for tenants to move on. And so construction has begun from this year for tenants to actually move on. So when you come to the site visit, you will see a lot of more activity on site than you ever saw before in South Africa. So certainly the site is being developed and is being taken up by tenants. I think also to recognize that there's a lot of, and I appreciate the members' comments on the detail in the annual report, and we'll certainly take that on board in our review of our annual report performance, and management thereof going forward. On the other members' specific question on easy doing business issues that we are addressing in the unit, I'd like to take that to my colleague Benedicta Durgan, who heads up the unit. And then on your question of international standards and the readiness that we are putting in place for local SMEs and enterprises, my colleague Patrick Lakavani, who's head of our development program, and my chair has just reminded me of the point. So in the past year, the board and the management team have been reviewing and setting a new five-year strategy for the organization, for the company, effective from next year. And we have made it quite clear, and we are committed to commercial sustainability within the next 3 years. Actually, and then what that means is we are actually moving up our initial target of commercial sustainability in 5 years to 3 years. So we're shortening that period to 2 years, and that will require this company to work diligently and engage robustly with all stakeholders who are important to achieving that deliverable. So from the municipality, from our other colleagues in the province, be it with regards to zoning and EIA issues and environmental management issues, to the DTI in the funding transfer and any other stakeholder in between. So that is really the view and the strategy of the company going forward for the next 3 years. And Benedict,
Honourable Member, I think Kash has already touched on the fact that with regards to our existing business offering and what might seem as an overlap between what's happening provincially, waste production units, even the national Invest SA one-stop shop, it really does differentiate in the fact that we're specifically enabling business to operate within this customs control area regime, which we term as a free port. So it's under a specific umbrella. And although you are speaking, so at face value, it looks like you are speaking here to SARS, to Home Affairs, to Department of Transport, to Labour, and so forth, but you're speaking on a very specific new narrative, which is being the first free port that we will be operating under in the zone. And hence, to give you an example, in a meeting that was held last week with the provincial customs department from SARS, with one of our investors and tenants, in the discussion, even the questions we posed to them, they even was kind of alluding to the fact that it's not going to be business as usual because it's a new sector, new way of operating and servicing. So instead of the traditional trade across the port, this is a service port. So there are nuances where you do need your own specific guidance. In the sense of red tape reduction or one-stop shop or ease of doing business. But also more importantly is that the ease of doing business in the Savannah Bay IDZ particularly is not only a red tape reduction, but it's also a commercial offering. So there would be private sector service providers who also then value add to the proposition with regards to the operation of enhancing investors to come and set up specifically in our zone and to retain those investors. So it is a bespoke service offering. The terminology or the naming convention might of course be cutting across, as you will see probably coming into the next strategy to the province, but it is a unique offering with what we've got modeled with our existing business framework at the IDZ.
Honourable from the
Thank you, Chair.
Chair, perhaps it's just that. Sorry, Chair. Thank you, Chair. On getting companies ready to comply with international standards and
as required by our tenants and investors. We have secured, we committed 1.5 million rand this financial year, where a company was appointed to do an assessment on the current SMMEs within the Salvador Bay area to see which levels they are, look at the compliances, look at the business operations, the systems that they use, and compare that with the oil and gas and maritime sector, in fact, with what our tenants would need. That survey has been done, it's just been concluded, the report is ready. So we've done a gap analysis. The next step on that gap analysis, obviously, to look for funding now, and to implement those interventions to ensure that those companies do comply with what our tenants would want. So that's the next step, the second phase of getting our companies ready. That's a direct answer to that.
I'm just going to talk about the statement.
Thank you, Chair. Can I point you to page 47 of your report? And perhaps I'm just, not reading this closely enough. But in the first line there, under the heading, you say phase one completed sooner than anticipated. Now, when you speak of the Freeport business case project, I don't know if that is a physical structure that you're referring to. Is it not? And then when you say at the bottom of the page, you know, phase 1A was completed and phase 1B partially completed, then you're referring to a different project. Is that okay? No, thank you. That helps. But also, again, my question was, do you have capacity for growth? Or I hear you're looking for additional capital and so on. But within the current facilities that you have, do you have space available? And if so, you know, can we get an indication, be it in percentage or be it in square meters or, you know, so that we can just know what are your current challenges? Because I presume what we all want to see is our capital working for us, not the structure standing empty or underutilized and so on. If you could just help me, I think I asked that previously as well, just give us an indication of your unutilized space, please.
Honourable Conchal?
Thanks, Jay.
Honourable Conchal, just a reminder of the mic.
Maybe to close off on the question that was responded to by Mr. Lakabani. Thanks for the response, and hopefully in our resolutions we can maybe get access to the gap analysis report. My worry, as you are saying now, the issue is to consider funding, and you know, and already I think going through the report I already saw that this is one of the unfunded money. Now it begs the question, you know, with all that good work and that expectation and that protest you were talking about, which is a serious risk, we continue to have such, you know, and this is the biggest problem about such empowerment, transformation related things. They are always not funded money, but there's an expectation that things must happen. I do not know how. And what is the plan to mitigate that risk? Because it is already in the book. And if you already have created, because by engaging with people and saying, you know, this is what we're going to do, you're creating an expectation. And I think already the community there, you know, is very much eager, you know, to participate and grab on this opportunity of the IDZ. So I think my concern, and perhaps CEO or the chair, you can speak about what's the plan, you know, to mitigate this, because I've already saw, you know, in the other pages that what there is this work, which is very much intense, expected to be done, but it remains an unfunded mandate. I do not know, maybe the minister also from the department, they can respond. Moving away from it, Chair, I wanted to check there in page 34, because now I got back my group now that I see the numbers properly. I just wanted to check in the strategic outcome or the goal statement there, considering that there's a projected GDP contribution that the entity anticipates, and we are already now on the third quarter of 2019-20, you know. Just wanting to check in your own workings and operation in the IGZ, do you think you'll be able to achieve this? And then the next one, Chair, the other one, I wanted to understand what's the difference between the innovation hub. I think it's on page innovation campus, actually. It's on page 45, Chair. Because when I went through just doing the reading of the content, I'm struggling to see, or maybe that could be nuanced for me, it's different to the other programs, you know, that are within this particular function of development program. And who is, actually, maybe I must not ask that question because it relates back to the issue of cost. Who is actually going to be funding, you know, or who is funding that particular campus? So I will stop there at the moment, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you very much. So I think on the question of the unutilized space and the occupation, I think I would direct it to my colleague Laura Feinstein, who is the Executive for Business Development. But to preface, you know, the most direct answer to your question is that looking at our tenant pipeline and with our target of reaching commercial sustainability in 3 years, we foresee that the zone, the 356 hectares, will be fully utilized over the next 3 to 5 years. So it's going to be quite a lot of activity taking place on the West Coast. But Laura can go into the specifics of to understand that further. And then if I may, member, handle your question on how do we plan to mitigate the risk of expectation and ability to deliver. I think that over the years we've put in many strategies and plans to work with the community in a cooperative way, in a very direct and very frank manner, and respectful as well. That's why the formation of the development programs unit was actually done last year, in this year under the review. So it is that creative synergies can happen between field development, enterprise development, and contractor development, but also to have a focused conversation with those targeted communities, the people and the businesses, about specifically what the zone can be for them, and what opportunities and what we are able to deliver within our the resources as the IGZ licensing companies. And I think certainly it's reflected in the report, but the department and various pieces have played a phenomenal role in supporting that unfunded mandate that we have, and by funding the development program that we have undertaken over the years. And we look forward to continuing that relationship with them in a very strategic manner, and in a very clear manner now that we've done the gap analysis and we have the very specific information about what the community, what the businesses require in order to be competitive. So there can only be further synergies enabled from the work that we've done this year. I think, to reflect that, over the past year and up till the year under this view, we estimate that in the report, we say that over 100 million has been spent on local contractors, and up till now for this year so far that spend has increased by to 162 million. So in terms of really enabling the leverage that we have from our construction projects and the platforms that we have with businesses,
even though it is an unfunded mandate, we have leveraged as much as we can from the assets and the capital that we do have at play. I think on your question on page 34, with respect to synergy of the strategic outcome-oriented goal, I'd like to ask my COO, Doug, who was the previous CE, to comment on that, because that was part of our existing five-year strategic plan when we initiated in 2014. And then I think on the innovation campus, he can also answer that because that's a program under his management as well.
Thank you, Honourable Member, for the question. As Kasia has already sort of prefaced the answer, within our commercial sustainability goals in the next 3 years as an organisation, we've already indicated that roughly between the next 3 to 5 years, our footprint in terms of leasable property is going to be something that we need to be planning for in the future. We are already doing so. Maybe just also from a step backwards perspective to kind of indicate that we don't just lease property because someone asks for a specific amount of property. Within our mandate of creating socioeconomic activity, creating jobs, stimulus for suppliers and contractors in our value chain of the sector we focus on, it's not about rental, if I could say. It's about maximizing the number of companies that we can establish on our property. And perhaps just going to just then a level of detail to kind of give an indication that currently we have 3 tenants operational on site. Our Portland, our phase, what's it called, sort of our south property, was the indications on your questions on phase 1A and B, to refer back to it. That is our more valuable property because it's closer to quayside, closer to the water edge. So we do have fairly strict criteria in terms of how we lease that out. And given our current pipeline of tenants, I mean, we don't measure percentage utilization per se, so there's no exact number that I can give you an indication on, but I can say safely that within our pipeline of tenants, both of those phase 1A, B, and even phase 2 in the future are pretty much 100% full in terms of our tenant pipeline. They are longer term projects in terms of construction, so they are bigger projects. Typically, these projects might take 2 to 3 years just for construction phase. It is going to take longer to visibly see tenants on site, but there will be construction. On our north property, which is the property that Kasia indicated was already fully serviced, there is a couple of properties still available. So if new tenants outside of our existing pipeline came to us today to ask for space, as long as we could accommodate them within the footprint, we can. But as indicated, we are looking at future planning with respect to that. Just because our footprint finishes doesn't mean our mandate does, if I could say.
Hi, sorry, Doug Southcott. I wasn't here to introduce myself, but I came in later. Crash always gets me to answer the hard questions. Essentially, at the beginning of our last 5-year plan, which ends at the end of this year, we wanted to set up a pipeline of tenants and or business that would create the GDP that we've put in there for both South Africa and also for the Western Cape. Each year we run our pipeline through an economic model, as well as what we've actually done through an economic model, and we measure both GDP and jobs. And at the moment our pipeline exceeds, the economic value of our pipeline exceeds what we have here. So, from a future point of view, we have that on our books, if you like. With regard to the Innovation Campus, it's our desire to be a world-class marine and oil and gas centre. And if you look at any of the world-class centres, they have something in the vein of the Innovation Campus. And the innovation campus is a relatively complicated combination of research and development, probably high learning, and then very high level of training. And when I mean training, I don't mean it's not a skills, it's where you'd have an engineer that did something very complicated who would need to be retrained. To the best of my knowledge, the only other one in the Southern Hemisphere, I think, is in Australia. And places like Singapore, Norway, Houston, all have, and Aberdeen, or close to Aberdeen, have the equivalent of that kind of centre. It's gone through a number of phases, and I think if you do, or when you do come out, we're at a stage now where we've got a bankable feasibility study done, and we're going to start it possibly initially just as a virtual centre. So it might, I think next week we'll be talking to the telescope people about the kind of data that they're managing, and they're very keen to talk to us as well. So it's that sort of thing, but it will also encompass more marine. So it would be, from a Saldana point of view, it might encompass fishing or you know, all that sort of marine cluster, if you like. It's a little bit of a vague thing, but it's quite complicated, and I'm sure when we share the cost benefit with you, you would understand.
If I may add, so the cost of the innovation campus and the study so far has been funded by the DTI from the SEZ, the SEZ fund, because the scope of that fund allows for feasibility studies to be funded. And certainly in the same vein as all of our infrastructure projects, we would, if depending on the commercial and the academic partners that we find to do the innovation campus jointly, we would be looking to co-fund the relevant aspects of the building itself from the DTI SEZ fund, to be on the same model basis as we've done with all infrastructure today. So that certainly is not part of our CAPEX operational cost, if I can make that distinction.
Any follow-up? None? Tabling party going once. Tabling going twice. Part D is table. Are you going to ask another question?
On?
Oh, Part B is table.
Yes.
Going on to Part D. Part D is going to be pages 60 to 62. I'm going to say that.
Yes. Thank you, Chair. Chair, when you talk about human resource, unfortunately, we also speak about salaries, which I know is always a very sensitive topic, so please indulge with me. The average cost per staff member, if I look at page 60, seems to be more than 750,000 rand per annum. Secondly, if I look across the floor, you all look like very young professionals. So it seems to me as if the Saldana IB is far more lucrative to work for than Eskom. Everybody, you know, has been going on about Eskom 708,000 average staff cost per annum. So I understand that the majority of the staff need to be professionally qualified, etc. But I'm just asking, have all these positions the posts, have they been professionally evaluated in terms of the salary bands, etc., and what system do you use? Then on page 61, it seems to me if you work for the Saldana IBZ, you don't only get 13 checks in a year, you also get a 14th check. If we compare, for example, the percentage of performance rewards to total personnel cost, standing at 17.6%, and taking that a 13th check is normally in the order of about 8%, that's why I believe you get 14 checks in a year. Perhaps you can just tell me, taking into account what you've earlier said about certain delays and, you know, that you have to make up time and so on, why
do you then believe that the staff is all performing exceptionally well, or in general, performing, because normally a 14th check is linked to exceptional, really, really exceptional performance. And then, Chief, there at the bottom, when you talk of your vacancy rate, now I know it's difficult when you're talking about small numbers, 37 staff members, of which you then say six positions are vacant. But it does seem to me, well, you'll have to clarify. Earlier today we heard about funded positions and unfunded positions, and certain tables spoke of, you know, funded positions, and others did not refer to that. So that is, if you could just clarify that for me as well, why is there a 14% vacancy in general with the Saldanha IDC? And then also on page 61, it seems to me, if I look there at the training expenditure, as if four of you are all doing the same study program. The 40,000, 4, 5, 7 just seems to be too incidental. That it's so. Perhaps you can you would mind sharing with us what program is that that these staff members have enrolled for, and for that kind of cost, it seems almost like a formal university study program. Is it a multi-year commitment, etc.? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Any other questions? None? Yeah. Okay. Thank you, Chair members. So I think I'll take it page by page, and I'll ask my CFO to assist me with detail where required. So on page 60, with regards to the average cost per staff member. So we benchmark our salaries against the other IDZs and SEZs in the country, and we benchmark at 50% to 70% of that general percentile of all the other SEZs and IDZs in the country. And so that's where the benchmarking comes from. We did it in 2014 when we started, and actually this year, because it is after every 5 years, we've just reviewed and redone those benchmarks. And I will say that the being in the Western Cape does offer a different lifestyle component, which you make up with your salary, which I think is an international national conversation on salaries and attracting and retaining talent in the Western Cape versus the northern provinces like Gauteng, for example. So it's an independent assessment that we've done, the review of the benchmarking, and then in terms of the grading, we use the Paterson grading system to grade those positions. And we use the job description benchmarks against the different classifications and description on the Paterson grading. And I think that with regard to page 61 on the performance rewards, so we do not offer 13th checks or 14th checks, it's just performance incentives. And I'll ask Edmund to explain the policy thereof in that. So I think if Edmund, if you can just take that up.
Thank you, Jane. The performance incentives, like Koshifa mentioned, is not a 13th or 14th check. So it's, when we negotiate contracts with staff members, it's included in the package. And together with that, it also comes with a strict KPI process, key performance areas process. So after each year, after the audit has been completed, the process is concluded by looking at the audited process, the audit of the year and the performances of the organization, and then it goes down to the management and then also to the rest of the staff to see whether those performances were met in those individual categories. And then based on that, an incentive is then applied on the contractual agreement with the staff member, and that's where the number is coming.
Thanks, Herman, for the technicality, and also to add, I think in the fact that we are firstly the first IDZ to be designated in a port in South Africa,
and secondly, that our targeted focus is on emerging industries such as oil and gas servicing and maritime economy that has taken a hit over the past few years in the economy in general. So I think that in terms of setting performance-related targets for the team, we have met most of the performance targets, and there is some delays with regards to the infrastructure. But certainly for the past, this being this report being the fourth report in terms of our strategy and our operations, we set stretch targets for ourselves because we are doing something new in South Africa, and we are working with a lot of volatility in the national investment climate as well as the global investment climate. And so sometimes these projects do take longer to take off than previous anticipated, and we manage that quite strongly and on a quarterly basis with the board as well as in the performance management. And the chair wants me to iterate and the national space, the volatility there as well. So if I can move on to your question on the training costs. So that was a group discount that we obtained for training from the different units. So the cost was the same for those group of staff underwent the same training. So that's why the amount is the same. And it was for specialist project management training, because a lot of the work that we do needs to be integrated between the different units in order to ensure that the project and the pipeline realizes over time. So that's why it's the same number for them. I think with regard to the comment on employment and vacancies, so I would say that has been an area that we've had to manage. I think the thing, and to reiterate what I've said before, we are doing something new in South Africa. So selecting, recruitment and selection is certainly very difficult for us. So, because we're competing with other IDZs and SEZs as well for their talent in terms of knowing how to operate such a facility and understand the dynamics at play in the local government, in the local economy, in the provincial economy, and the national economy. So the skilled people that we require is quite difficult to hold on to.
Thank
you, Chair. Thank you for answers to these, as I've said, sensitive questions. May I just again ask about the bonus system? You've said that you have partially, you know, achieved your targets, etc. So my question is, let's say you would have achieved all your targets. What would be the maximum bonus that the staff would be able to get? Would it be 25% of the total personnel cost, or, you know, I just want to understand what is your system and what is the upper limit in terms of that. Then secondly, in terms of your did I hear you correctly that you say that you have to pay a premium price in order to attract people to the Western Cape? Because generally I have heard, happen to understand that it's the other way around, that because of the quality of life in the Western Cape, people are willing to settle for a somewhat less inflated salary. And then, please, again, thank you for your answer on the project management program that four staff members have been running. Where will this lead to? Is it a certificate that they will receive? Is it a diploma? Is it a degree? And I think I've also asked, have you finished this program, or is it a multi-year engagement that Sultana IDZ is embarked upon on behalf of the staff members? Is it something that you can carry with you in the sense of like an MBA or, you know, something like that? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair and members. So the upper limit is 25% performance rewards. I think on the, so certainly that's not what I meant, that you pay a premium. in salaries, we do not pay a premium in that regard. And what I said is we benchmark our salaries on the 50th percentile of the averages of the ACDs and IDDs in the country. So that's our benchmark. With regard to the training, yes, certainly it's resulted in a certificate. And I think it's an ongoing training that we try to get new people, new staff assimilated to, because that is the project management environment that we use internally in the organization. So certainly they can benefit and use this as a value add in their skills and their experience.
Follow-ups? None? I'll table Part D1. I'll table Part D20. Part D is tabled.
Chair, perhaps I may say at our previous engagement we were informed that the position of the CEO would be filled within days. I think Dr. Stegman said within a week. And I think we should put on record that he stuck to his word. And I think we can congratulate therefore Ms. Dukas on the appointment after having acted for quite a while. So thank you, Chair.
Thank you. It shall be so noted. Part D has been tabled officially. Is there anyone from the community that would like to ask a question? None? Thank you so much for Saldana for being here and for tabling the annual report, and thank you for your engagement today. Have a safe trip home. Well, now you saw your first phone call. There is lunch for those who will not be staying for the provincial treasury briefing. I will give 4 minutes break just for special links before we start the meeting. Thank you.
back, everyone. Before we start, with the provincial treasury briefing, we'll just give them a few minutes to set up and settle in. Before we start, I just would like us to run through resolutions on the three reports before we do the briefing, just so that everyone remembers their resolution. So, I will open up the floor for resolution. Okay, we also ask the presidential officer to read out some resolutions that we can consider then as well.
Good afternoon, members. The first is there was the retentive action, the preliminary investigation that other members of the council asked about in the either a report or a
Members happy with a report or a briefing on the research reduction? Do you want a report or do you want a briefing? Briefing. Okay. We resolve then for a briefing on that. Next one.
Then the department cost of the 60 million sales budget and the center can give us a breakdown of that.
Members happy with that resolution?
Happy Chair, I think if we could perhaps just get more clarity also on the support given to our TVET colleges and the apprenticeship program. What is the nature and also the monetary implications of that support, as well as the success rate of that intervention?
Everyone happy with the resolution? Next one.
Okay, there was the requested report on the funded, unfunded, full and unfulfilled from the department.
Everyone happy with that resolution?
And then also with Mr. Beaker raised a few concerns, and the chairperson asked that the department respond to him, and also they said that they were linking with Cape Town tourism.
Perhaps we can phrase that we've requested that the department shift delays with Mr. Beaker and refer it either to the respective projects, programs, and to provide him with the necessary information he has requested.
But there was the report that Women Corn Law asked for, I think it's with the CAP analysis report, so CAP
analysis. If I'm happy with that resolution, request the report. Okay. Any other resolution?
I have to say, after this morning, I feel even more convinced that we need to prioritize our visit to the Saldanha IDZ area to see for ourselves the progress made there.
Thank you, Honourable Prime Minister. It is on our to-do list. Unfortunately, due to the budget season, our program at the moment is quite packed. We may have to wait until the beginning of next year to do a site visit. Any other resolution? None? Resolutions are complete then. Welcome to Provincial Treasury. I'm going to give a little bit of context for this meeting first, and then I will... Procedurally, I need to adjourn the first meeting and then start the second meeting. So I've adjourned the first annual report meeting, and I am...